Welcome to Safety Spectrum, your environmental health and safety connection. This program is a presentation of the Michigan Safety Conference. For almost a century, the annual conference has provided credible educational opportunities and valuable support to the safety and health practitioner by offering 120 instructional programs along with exhibits highlighting the latest in safety equipment, instrumentation, and demonstrations. To learn more about the conference, please find us at MICH safetyconference.org.
Welcome to Safety Spectrum. I'm your host, Sheila Ide. This program is sponsored by the Michigan Safety Conference, and our topic today is Beyond Compliance. A constant dilemma for safety and health professionals is how do we obtain compliance? Somehow just seeing that something might harm equipment or yourself doesn't quite do the job. Here to discuss another way is our guest, Douglas Hill. Doug of Consumers Energy has worked in the utility industry for 35 years. He spent 28 years as a line worker in charge and service worker. He spent the last 15 years in the safety sector, seven of that as a full-time culture team member, human performance coordinator, and a safety culture champion. He's presented at many top events in the industry, as well as at the Michigan Safety Conference and also for MIOSHA, speaking on such topics as situational awareness, line of fire, and safety culture. So thank you so much for joining me today, Doug.
I appreciate you having me here, Sheila.
I'd like to know, in your many years as a line worker, why did you decide to go into the safety side of it?
Well, it seemed like that we were really kind of at that place where we needed to get some leadership from the field that was going to get invested in how we were going to change culture. And safety and culture, we're going to talk about that obviously during this time, but really it gave us that drive to, you know, get some of the experienced people to get invested in it, because moving the mark, really you needed the seasoned employees to buy in and really look at that. And I was also a union representative for our company. And I found that, you know, from a workforce perspective, that we really needed that balance as well from that side of the business. So.
And I have to ask you, would you describe for me what a human performance coordinator is? What is human performance? What are we measuring?
So human performance is really the science behind errors or systems within your company. So it'd be, you know, it's really that science behind predictability of the system that you work within. And it can be any of the people, the programs, process, work environment, organization, or equipment that you have within your company. And you as the worker in the center of that system are really what makes all of that happen. And all of that affects you as well as you affect it. So it's really about the science of that and how predictable things are when we look at it from a systemic piece versus just blame culture.
So you break down the process and then how the human fits into that process.
That's correct.
So why did you start looking at culture over compliance? That's so, it's easy. You tell people to do stuff and they do it, right?
Well, I think it's really easy to be clear about what the difference between compliance safety and cultural safety is. You know, compliance safety is that rules, policies, and procedures. And that seems like it's a little more black and white about how safety looks, but culture is something that you can't necessarily put your hands around. You it's a place where you're looking and saying, I want you to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, not because someone told you to. That's a good cultural piece, right? You're really trying to get people to understand why we went that way. It was really to say, if you can't change hearts and minds, you can give them all the rules that you want, but it won't change anything, right?
So that's to use the difference between culture and compliance, is that telling them what to do as opposed to having them buy into the...
That's correct. And moving those areas of people that might not have any touch with the compliance part of safety and saying, hey, the way you carry yourself, the way you look at safety, the way you approach it. And I always say that's the walk the walk, not the talk, right?
Right. You
understand, you know, how to buy in that way.
Well, what do you consider the keys to be successful with this changing the culture?
Well, I think a lot of the things that, you know, we talk about are really about building some affinity between your leadership and your field employees, and really understanding that everybody has a face in safety, not just a management piece, or not just a field worker, or not just an engineer, or not just a call center rep, but everybody has a face in safety. And when you're talking about that from the difference between being compliant and culturally changing people, is you really have to move hearts and minds. You're going to hear me say that a lot about changing hearts and minds. You have to get people to believe that working shoulder to shoulder, not nose to nose, is the most important thing that you can do.
Now, I didn't talk about this with you before, but wouldn't the whole culture of the whole company, not just in safety, but in all things that you do, wouldn't that all have to kind of change too?
Absolutely. And your systems have to support safety culture. You have to have a culture within safety that supports the business systems. I mean, all these companies are trying to make money just like anyone else. And they want to do it efficiently. But we always tell people this: if you get safety correct from a compliance and a cultural piece, production and quality will follow. People that do it safely will do it with quality, and people that do it with quality will do it productively. And I always laugh, and I say this in a lot of the trainings that I'm in. I always say, how come we always have time to do it over again, but we don't have time to do it right the first time?
That's exactly right. Slow down. That's another thing. Well, how do you reward people? How do you get people to buy into the whole concept of culture and that the company cares?
So I think a lot of it has to be is you got to win village by village. And I think that a lot of what I talk about is people want to, you know, go in and drain the ocean. They think that you're going to go tackle the entire company and change all those hearts and minds at once. You have to win village by village. So you have to go to each work area and talk about the culture, talk about the compliance piece and how they tie together and how important that culture is to move it forward. Because you're going to go in every room and you're going to have opposing people that are going to say, oh, you know, this is just the flavor of the month. This is just exactly what you guys brought here last year. And I can proudly tell you that our company has we started this in 2005, six, somewhere in there as a complete company. So, you know, we're quite a ways down the path now on this, and we're still going strong. So,
well, like then that triggers the question of how did it start with consumers?
Well, that's a very I'm going to take a 10,000 foot view and give you a little bit of like some of the background. The relationships between management and the field employees was not always handshakes and hugs. There was a lot of friction around safety, and it was a lot of it was I call it the hammer mentality. And you know, I'll try to be as politically correct as possible, but it was the hammer mentality, you know, to break knuckles to get people to comply. And I think that in the beginning we would go in a room and the company would be on one side and the union representatives would be on the other, and somebody would say something out of order and then it would go sideways, right? And I think that a lot of that was coming into that room, setting all those other differences aside and saying, hey, when we're in this room, we're going to only talk about safety. We're going to keep contractual. We're going to keep business decisions, all those types of things out of the arena and really focus on safety entirely in this room. And I think a lot of that was leaving stripes at the door. I think that was the other part is whether you're a CEO or you're a frontline employee, in that room, everybody has an equal voice because we're going down the safety path. So that was in the beginning was, I won't get specific. I'll just say to you that was a very challenging time because we had a lot of that nose to nose interaction. And then after time, we realized that we needed to be shoulder to shoulder, not nose to nose in order to move that mark. So
that's a great analogy. I think, especially for a line worker, you often work on your own. It's not like you have supervision looking over your shoulder all the time. So people got to be pretty independent in your line of work. I know that consumers covers other areas, power plants and that, but that must have been kind of difficult for the worker to understand that maybe management or executives did want to hear what you had to say, but it's key.
Yeah. And I think you really have to, you know, just get people to, focus on their piece of the world and how they can impact someone else. I told people that as we went down this path, I really got an appreciation for other people's point of view in the work, because I think that a lot of times we don't see each other's perspective. And I think that also was part of our growth, was looking at each other's work and saying, hey, you know, I was pretty critical of someone that was doing budgets, or critical of someone that's doing a MPSC filing or something like that. And now we're having discussions about that. We actually see safety from their perspective. And I think that was another, you know, growing point for us, you know, really having a respect for each other's work. People do what they do at the time they did it, because at the time they did it, it made sense. And I think that that's, you know, a human performance principle and a cultural principle that everyone should really, you know, embrace.
You talked a little bit earlier about bringing people on board and not calling it the flavor of the month. How did you get buy-in from the folks outside of your group?
Well, it was really difficult. I'd like to, you know, just like I said, paint that perfect Picasso, but I really like to tell people that we might go in a room and there may be four or five people that were very, very adamant against that, including my peers. When I moved over into this position, I got a lot of pushback from my peers in this space. So it used to be we would go in the room and we would avoid those people like the plague. We would just try to, you know, go and deal with the people that we could deal with and stay away from that. Now, the cultural aspect for us is really to keep addressing those people. And I tell people that once you win over some of those more difficult people, you win over a bigger portion of the room, because people say, hey, if you can turn that person around, you can win over a room for sure. And so people laugh now. When I go in those rooms now, I really focus on the ones that are pretty vocal. And I think that's an important part. I always say the barking dog is very important. And I'm going to use some analogies, so I hope I don't offend anyone, but the barking dog is very important to understand, is that you have to listen to what the dog is barking about to make sure that you know what's happening. And I always say, I'm happy to hear the barking dog because I know what their issue is and I can deal with it. I'm more concerned about the dog that sits in the corner and growls or says nothing. If I go into a room and it's silent, I'm very afraid from a safety space for that group, because either they're too scared to talk about it, or they're too withdrawn to give us information that we need to have to get better in the space. So I always tell people that silence is not a positive thing.
I hear you. And that's a little going off script a little bit. It's a little interesting to note that a lot of these violence in the workplace incidents seem to occur with somebody that was quiet. People say, gosh, I never thought he had a problem, because like you say, nobody bothered to find out.
Right.
Now, you talk about rewarding people and that. What if you've got a staff of 30 or 40? How do you get to know what each person needs or wants? How do you do that when you're a supervisor?
Well, I think that one of the things is that you got to find out some of the things that work. And I there's a lot of different avenues. I'm not going to make a sales pitch for anyone, but there's a lot of really good personality-based avenues out there. And some of them are like e-colors is one where you go in and you take an analysis of your people and have them take that on an app. And it basically talks about what their personality tendencies are. And a lot of that is very helpful when you're talking about being a leader, is understanding what the personality traits are of each of the employees that you have, because the way you approach them is going to be key to that. If you have someone that's an introvert and you say something very abrasive to an introvert, they'll shut down and you'll get no information. If you say something overpowering to some of those people, it's going to be a shutdown. And the strong personalities, understanding how to enable them and also redirect them as well when you're doing that is very important. So we use e-colors, we use Personalysis. There's a lot of different products out there that take you into that space. But that's a really good way for you to get a litmus test on the people that you're dealing with. Because if you have people that have strong personalities and they're working together, you have to understand how they maneuver in the space in order for that to be a good culture. Because you know as well as I do, if you put two ram horn sheep in the together, eventually you know, something's going to happen. So we always tell them that you have to be cognizant of the type of personalities they have and understanding how to approach them.
One of the things I heard you talk about was creating leaders out of people. And I think you use sports analogy. You're a coach too, aren't you?
I am a 30 plus year coach. So I've been in the space for a long, long time. I played collegiate football. I've been in a lot in the sports space. And I always talk about building leaders is that it's really important to understand when you're talking about changing culture is making sure that everyone has a voice and everyone has equal representation. And what I mean by that is that if I have a young lineman with me, working with me, I tell them, I don't want them to be as good as me. I want them to be better. I want them to be better. So that means that when I'm doing work, I'm including them in that process, or I'm letting them lead that process and me oversee that so that they become leaders. So that when I step away, I always tell people, these guys will not remember I was here 2 days after I'm gone. It's the company will go on, but building leaders is how you take that sustainability of culture and keep it going. So you really want your junior employees to pick up that torch and carry it as much as possible and reward them when they do. As senior leaders, make sure that you're not beating down those junior people in your organization. Give them, enable them a chance to have a voice and lead. And when they fail, help them get up, dust them off, help them get them into the space they need to be in, and teach them how to be better. And I think that has been also another part of this that we've seen that in our company, really from stop the job, good catches, all those kinds of things, those initiatives, is that if stop the job can only come from the senior leader, it doesn't have very much impact. But if stop the job can be enacted by anyone in your organization, it has a ton of impact culturally.
So that's well understood where you work, that anybody can stop a job.
So it's great that you should say that, because we didn't really cover that at all in any of our previous talks, but stop the job in our place is probably the most revered piece that we have in our arsenal. It is a formal process. We probably are one of the only utilities in the country that has a formal process for it. So once it's enacted, it has a formal process. So it has accountability throughout the process to make sure that either the supervisors or the field employees don't have an advantage in that space. So everybody has an equal voice, but yet everybody's held accountable within that space. And I can tell you that when that is spoken at our place, it's a very highly regarded and it's very well followed through. And that is a change of culture.
That's interesting. It's kind of funny how we create supervisors. Often we take the most technically astute person and we promote them. But do we take time to train them to change their outlook, that they're going to start nurturing people? They're going to start making them leaders instead of just, I'm really good at my job, so I'm going to tell you how to do it. So how do you get around that? Because that's often how we promote.
And I think that part of that is you have to have two different, two different layers of the onion that you need to address. Just because you're a good worker in the space that you were in doesn't make you a great leader when you're talking about the safety space. So we always say that you have to put as much investment in the leadership side of people as you do into them being great employees. So we've had people that are great field workers that don't make great supervisors on the front end because they don't have those leadership qualities to take that next step. So a lot of what we do is when we're talking about this from a cultural standpoint is, you know, teaching them how to culturally lead and get the best out of their people, not be looking at the got you mentality or big brother watching mentality.
I would think you're turning out better supervisors if people are embracing the culture. I mean, it's been in there for several years now, so you might be getting better supervisors out of it. What are you the most proud of and why?
Man, I am completely and utterly most proud of our partnership between the, I say, the union side of the business or the working end of the spear and the company. I think that we are one of the leaders in the space at the partnership. If you walk, and I gave this example in the past, is that when you used to walk into our meetings, we would have executives down this side, we'd have union leadership down this side, and you could clearly tell who was who. If you went into our meeting today, you would have zero idea who is our CEO and who is a frontline employee, because they're all speaking the same language. They're all seeing safety as being the forefront, and they all take it as the same priority, and all of their stripes get left at the door. And I always tell people, it's not always a handshake and a hug in there. There's a lot of things that hit the table, but everybody handles themselves well, and they do a really good job of saying, hey, what is, at the end of the day, what's the best thing for our people, and how do we achieve it?
And you know, we can't get away from analytics and measurements. So have you noticed a change in your safety activity or in your incidents? Has this had an impact?
Yeah, so I tell people that from the time we started doing this, 2016, 17, 18, we were, one of the safest, if not the safest utility in the nation in this space. We had, 67 recordables with 9,000 employees in 2017. So I would say that was our pinnacle. 2018, we had a couple of fatalities, and I tell people that was another place where we had to go back, do some self-reflection and say, hey, are we as good as we think we are? Or do we need to really look at moving another step of culture? So we've made some adjustments since then. We're starting to get some more ground level problem solving based around that. And I really feel like right now we've turned into looking at high severity injuries and making that a larger priority than just your standard recordable incident, saying, hey, let's talk about the things that can seriously hurt us or kill us. And let's put a lot of emphasis on that. Those fatalities really shook us to the core, because even at our best, when you're talking about numbers, we still didn't send everyone home safe. And we said, hey, you know what? We really need to evaluate ourselves and say, we're not only going to be good in the space, but we need to take that next step. So I'm really proud of the work everybody's doing in that space, and how we've reprioritized ourselves and said, not only do we need to keep working on culture, but we need to work on processes and procedure to put ourselves into a better space for things that can hurt or kill us in the work area.
I think one of the things you mentioned to me was the analysis that people are required to do, well, taught to do, required to do. You said something about, what if you're going to put out 30 poles? You know, what do we do before we start this job? And, how do you?
Yeah, so one of the things. One of the things that we talk about in this is around error reduction and human performance is talking about this person on this task at this time. And the example that Sheila brought up there was, I said, hey, if I'm out as a line worker and we're setting poles, 30 poles on the side of a road, everyone would that works outside of the line department might say, a pole is a pole is a pole. They're setting 30 of them. These guys do it for a living. They can do it with their eyes closed, right? So the event that we really have been looking at from that self-reflections piece is say, we need to look at this person on this task at this time, meaning that each and every one of those pole locations have a different obstacle. Maybe the first one is completely fine. Maybe the next one, we have a dog that has appeared in the yard. Maybe the next one, we have an irate customer. The next one, we have traffic that's very close to our work site. All of those things are different. So just changing poles is not really enough. It's saying we want our people to evaluate culturally and rules-based, job by job, task by task. And I think that's a little bit hard at first, because I think people say, I don't want to do that much thinking. But at the end of the day, I always tell people that if it takes 15 more minutes to make your day complete today, to make it safe, your family and the people that love you will not care. And I remember something my daughter said to me as I was ready to leave for a storm. And she said, Dad, I really don't care what you do for a living. She said, all I care is that you come home every day. So she had no balance for anything that I'd be doing. So this person on this task at this time for me is saying, you know, treat every job as if you have a family member next to you, and evaluate yourself based on that culturally and from a compliance standpoint.
There is no such thing as routine, Ben. I like
absolutely.
That. So how do you believe that this concept can be sustained? How do you keep people moving forward in culture concept?
Well, I will tell you this. It is challenging because as we came on doing this, a lot of the workforce that we had was very seasoned, and we had a lot of people that hadn't been changed out, or we didn't really have a lot of turnover for quite some time. So just in the last couple of years, just with baby boomers, everything else, we have had a lot of retirements. We have a very large number of hirings. We are about 37%, if I remember correctly from statistics lately, of new supervisors in our company. So we are really going to have to, from a sustainability, we're going back now and doing base floor training with all of those groups. And I think that having continuous education is paramount. I always tell people, when you get to zero in your company in injuries, are you done working? And the answer is no way. The hardest work's going to happen when you're at zero, because now you have to sustain it, right? Yeah. And with 10,000 employees in our case, we have a lot to sustain. So we tell people that you can never let your guard down. You got to keep your foot on the throttle all the time. You cannot change your motion or direction on how you're going to get there.
If you could start again, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to others just starting out on this safety culture journey?
Well, I would make sure that don't indulge yourself in a lot of other programs until your culture is just. And I tell people that we see a lot of companies at events, and they're tackling all these initiatives, and their culture is, for lack of a better term, is terrible. And when you start off with a culture that doesn't sustain, you can put all the money you want in there. I always tell them you could take your money out in the street and burn it, because it's not going to be good until the culture is sustainable. So putting a lot of stock into making sure you get a just culture and buy-in, and then start moving into other initiatives, that is what I would recommend to any companies that are starting on this journey.
I know we've touched on it a couple of times, but how do you sell safety culture to a diverse group of workers? I mean, I don't just mean gender and race. I mean, you know, people that are disabled or people coming from different backgrounds, different education.
Well, I think that a lot of it has to do is you got to show people how safety affects them. And it goes back to that same thing that I talked about learning some of these different values of the jobs and going out and sitting and listening to what some of their obstacles are, and then start talking about what is the cultural spin for them. Because somebody that works in an office or remotely, like an engineer or a field safety person or a real estate agent for our companies, those are all people that would say, well, I'm not a field employee. That safety doesn't really apply to me. Well, those real estate people can go out and get bit by a dog just like anyone else. They can get into a car accident just like anyone else. And really understanding. So I would say that going out and looking at it from a diversity standpoint is looking at the people and saying, tell me some of the exposures that you have in your day, and what do they look like, and what would you expect from a safety perspective from that? And then start building a cultural fit for that work group. And that goes along with, you know, making sure that you diversify your efforts, not just throw a blanket over safety and say, we're going to be safe today. Because if someone walks up to you, Sheila, and says, hey, Sheila, be safe. Did that really?
That doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, that doesn't move you at all. But if I say, Sheila, tell me some things that are important to you in the safety space, you tell me, and then I say, okay, here's a couple of ways that you can culturally change that, then you're going to carry that with you each and every day. And you may even share that with coworkers, which is the best thing. I tell people all the time, us giving them product is not the best medicine. The best medicine is peer-to-peer. When you have peers talking to peers about what they're hearing and doing, and they're reacting to that stuff together, that's the best cultural move you can have.
And I think when you talk about diversity, I think it's getting to know people a little bit and talking to them about their families, kind of reminding them why we're working safely. I think we've said that a couple of times. So
I use the sports analogies of the complex sandwich. And I always tell people that you have to say something good. So if I start off the conversation with Sheila and say, "Hey, Sheila, how's it going? How's your family doing? Your daughter's still in college, you know, whatever." And you get that conversation started. Then I give her the opportunity that I see, which might be, "Hey, you know, you don't mind. Can we go down and add a little bit to your roadside protection here? I'll even be glad to walk down there with you while you do it." And then come back and say, "Hey, Sheila, I'd like you to have a great weekend, man. See you later." And then I carry on. So I said something good, gave the opportunity, said something good. And I always say that's the compliment sandwich of how you move hearts and minds. If I come up and the only thing that you ever see me for is me pointing out opportunities to you, you're going to see me in the wrong light each and every time I come up. And I always tell them that the culture, when I come up to a site or I come into an office setting, is that if they're scrambling around when I show up, is the culture good or bad? The culture is not good because they see me as being somebody that's bringing compliance to that group, not somebody that's bringing a thought of safety. And I really do care that you go home to your family every day.
Exactly. So you got any final thoughts for me?
Well, I really appreciate being able to share a story with you guys on here with this. And I couldn't be more proud of the work that we do, Union and Company here with safety. We have incredible people. We have nearly 750 people involved in safety at Consumers, which is, you know, almost 10% of our workforce. We have a lot of full-time people from the union and the company side that are dedicated to this from a compliance, from a procedure and culture space. So it's really good. And I'm really proud of the collaboration that we have. And I'm more excited to come on here, talk with you, Sheila, and share our story. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much. I believe we need to remember people need to feel safe expressing opinions and thoughts in the workplace. They would rather be part of the solution than a problem to be solved, is how I look at it. So thank you, Doug Hill from Consumers. He can be reached at douglas.hill@cmsenergy.com. And of course, if you'd like to hear more information about the Michigan Safety Conference or this podcast, please contact us at michsafetyconference.org. Thank you so much for listening to Safety Spectrum. This is Sheila Ide.